nice little win. So thanks, guys, for everything.
No, you look incredible, brother. Well deserved.
Thank you, my friend.
Still a few creeping in. Anyone else want to share any wins? Any coaches on want to share client wins?
You got me taking HCL now. Successfully taking it. Two pills for two meals today, so.
How'd they go down?
They went down pretty good.
Okay, good. Good. It's
I'm still kicking.
a risky game.
I know. And I'm still kicking, so.
Right. For a lot of you guys, if you're available to, try and make sure you got your cameras on as well so I can see all your beautiful faces. Thanks, Jordan. Just a little bit of, because we're getting up to about 5 past now.
Greg, maybe in the next couple of minutes here, if Evan's okay with it, he could share some insights that he felt were extremely valuable contributions to ultimately his results and his success and then winning Pie in the Month. I'm curious.
Yeah, bro, it'd be great to hear, Evan, if you're all right to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. So insights. Being organized is everything. You know, having your food prepped for the week, measured out. And for me, I've got a pretty bad sweet tooth, so trying to limit, and I've got two young kids, so trying to limit those things in the house, so there's no urges. Also very fortunate to have the support of my wife, who's, you know, occasionally cook meals and measure things for me when I'm running around with the kids. So actually, right now I'm leaving the hockey rink with my son. So there's always somewhere to be, but just being intentional, being organized, having the accountability of Gavin and formerly Johnny, making sure I'm on track, also is very, very helpful. And also making adjustments when need to. I'm on the road a lot for work, and also we're away for hockey quite a bit. But being organized again, I have a cooler, electric cooler that I travel with. So my chicken and my beef and everything comes with us. So we're so I'd say being organized and, you know, staying on the path. Like, it's really easy to not train, but it's like it's just something you do every day. So for me, I make sure every day it's like, okay, I know on Tuesday it's leg day. So you go get your legs in. It's non-negotiable, right? So just being consistent. You know, even when you're tired, like there's some days I woke up early and trained. Some days I trained late. Some days I trained twice, you know. But like I said earlier, we're not done yet. There's still more work to do, but the building blocks are there for success. And it's not a fad thing with MI for anybody who's new. It's habit changing things that will help you for the future, right? So I'm someone who's competed before and have done a lot of things athletically, but, you know, having this new structure, actually knowing how to use my body the right way without killing myself training, you know, stimulating the muscle versus destroying it. It's been very, very good. With the amount of time I train, it's very nice to be able to keep still play sports, still get good workouts in, but also still feel good all the time. So Matt's no it's so for me it's been pretty life-changing for me being part of MI, and you know, the impact it has physically, mentally, as well as professionally for me has been, you know, I can't really put it into words, but again, thanks for all your support, folks.
Hell
That
of a
was fantastic.
testimonial.
Thanks so much, Evan.
Hell of a testimonial. Appreciated that, Evan. That's great. And also, just to follow up, guys, if anybody here is interested in going to Costa Rica in, I believe it's the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th of December, am I right? Please get in contact with your coach so that you can fill out the form just to show that you're interested in going. Yeah, December 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th. Great. Because spaces are going to run out quick, so we need to figure out what numbers we have so we can organize accommodation. We know what gym we're going to and all the rest of the stuff that tends to go with that. All right. So get in contact with your coach and get going. So Tonight, guys, it's my week. So I don't know if anybody's seen what the actual presentation is going to be about, but I wanted to go through something a little bit different this week. Every single time I tend to come on to talk about nutrition, it tends to be based around some sort of condition, some sort of thing that you guys are trying to solve in terms of getting in the best shape, feeling the best, and so on and so on. So today I wanted to go through something that is inevitable a little bit, but some I'm going to show you guys ways, because actually, just hands up, how many of you guys actually make your living with your brain rather than physically? The vast majority, right? So we want to make sure that your brain is in the right order all the way into old age. We talk about our body all the time, and don't get me wrong, that plays into it as well. But keeping our brain function as high and as functioning as possible is key to overall health and your ability to, again, to be able to provide for your family and provide for yourself going into life. So let me just share my screen and we'll get started. Can everybody see that? Give me a thumbs up. So again, slightly different to what we normally do. Now, I could call this anything, right? When you say how to avoid cognitive decline, it automatically starts, people start to look at it and think, oof, like this is getting a little bit deep. But I just mean staying focused and staying sharp all the way into our old age. We want to have the same faculties we have now when we get old. And there's loads, as we'll talk about it, loads of different factors. Now, again, like how many people here have, because it's a very common, it's not normal, but it's a very common thing now. How many people here have actually experienced cognitive decline? So either with a loved one, family member, friend, lots of people. Put my hand up, been there, right? And unfortunately, it's something that is becoming ever more common, but it's something that accumulates over time. It's for the most part, there's some incidences obviously where it can be very quick onset, but for the most part, this stuff is noticeable way before it gets bad and it needs a doctor's intervention. So I want to show you some of the factors that are at play here. And then I want to show you some of the lifestyle factors and nutritional approaches that we can take to make sure we're our best late into our lives. We'll go through the big picture of it all first, right? So I'm not going to go through the biochemistry of the brain. I can barely understand it myself. Never mind try and teach it to you. But what we're going to go through is the multivariate approach. One thing that Western medicine does, it does lots of things really well. If I cut off my arm, I do not want to go and see a nutritionist. If I have a serious acute illness, I do not want to go to a chiropractor. Western medicine does a lot of things very well. One thing it doesn't deal well with is degenerative diseases or chronic disease. And it's because they try to compartmentalize everything. So like, it's like problem with the brain, deal with the brain. Problem with the liver, deal with the liver. We have to understand this isn't a single varied approach. It's very much loads of different factors involved in brain cognition and cognitive decline. So we'll talk about then what these mechanisms are. We'll talk about the lifestyle factors, the nutritional factors, should be a question mark after that. And then lastly, we'll talk about the supplements, because most of you guys are very quick to ask for the supplement. We all are, right? Because that's easy. We pay for it. We take it. We hope it has an effect. There's until you have these other factors under control, you're going to really struggle to have any benefit from the supplements that I'm going to advise for you at the end. And this is just how it tends to go, right? So when we look at cognitive decline, it starts with you noticing it yourself. So it's like noticing like you're less efficient at the things that you used to be really good at. So whether that is remembering things, whether that is the ability to be able to read a book cover to cover, now you can only read a chapter. these are signs of mild cognitive decline, or subjective, I should say, before other people start to notice these problems. So when you catch these things early, you can have so much more of an effect on it. When you get here, the supplement probably won't help. The dietary approach probably won't help. When you're here, and when you're here, we can have affected. Or if you're before here, we're talking about preventing all these stages. So take it all into consideration. So this is the multivariate approach. These are all the factors. There's loads more. I could have named any organ in the body. We need to understand these are all connected. Everything is connected, and they all feed back to the brain. Okay. Now, the one thing, so I know someone asked about questions, and I know some people on the call have had issues with this. The one thing I'm not going to go through is traumatic brain injury. It has, if any of you have had a concussion, multiple concussions, I was a very bad boxer for many years, so I've had 3 or 4. So I have to make sure that a lot of these factors that I'm going to talk about are kept under control, because TBIs are a major contributor to cognitive decline. And I'll interchange cognitive decline, neuroinflammation. I'll talk about them kind of interchangeably. They're not quite the same, but I'll use them interchangeably. But I picked 4 organs, right? The liver, the heart, cardiovascular system, the gastrointestinal system, and technically an organelle, so I apologize, the mitochondria. Now, any of you guys that are relatively new, because I know there's loads of people on here who have been on loads of my talks before, so they will have heard my chats and these other things. If you haven't, I've done one on the cardiovascular system, I've done one on mitochondria, I've done one on the gastrointestinal system. I haven't done liver, but I'm writing one up for you as we speak. But just know that all these factors play a big role, okay? And we'll go through them individually. So what about the liver, right? Most of you guys will say, well, I don't drink much, right? So the liver is not necessarily a problem. 1 in 3 Americans now have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. That's big. That's the accumulation of fat within the liver. And like that leads on to steatosis, that leads on to cirrhosis. Now, probably in this group, not many of you have it, but you might have some fat accumulation within the liver. And we need to understand that we have something called a vagal nerve in our brain, and that runs down through our guts and innervates out into all our organs. And it's this multi-directional highway of information. So when there's inflammation somewhere else in the body, it will inevitably feed back to the brain and cause issues in the brain. And this, if anyone can answer this question, please put it in the chat. I don't think anyone's going to get it, but there'll be much appreciation if you do. What is the number one? Because most people who go into a nutritionist, functional medicine doctor, regular doctor who have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease don't complain of liver pain. They don't know they have it. What do you think is the number one symptom of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease? Guess if you need to. It's no problem, right? I wouldn't have got it if I got asked the first time. But just to keep you on edge, what do you think it is? So what would be the number one complaint? Coaches, answer. Okay. We got one. What else would anyone think in terms of symptoms? So we got one, right? They might be taking a while to load up. You got fatigue. The number one, about 50% of people with this condition will say they have depression, subclinical depression. So this is just emphasizing the point. We go back to depression. People always look at this as a serotonin problem, right? Maybe a little bit, right? But generally, it's an inflammatory problem. So we need to understand that the liver feeds directly back to the brain. So why do you think alcohol causes this issue, right? The gut plays a huge role. It's thought of as the second brain, the enteric nervous system. It has direct feedback or direct access to the brain, either through the microbes that are in it, which can play a big role, or it could be through what is called leaky gut. So with leaky gut, you can think of that as the breakdown of the gut lining. And then when these bacteria, they shed their lining and that gets into circulation. It's called LPS, lipopolysaccharides, and they can get into circulation. They can get past the blood-brain barrier, get into the brain, and cause systemic inflammation. Not systemic, cause localized inflammation in the brain. If they want to induce sickness behavior or depression in rats, they just inject them with lipopolysaccharides. That's how powerful they are. And there's the multi-hit thing here as well. Like the gut, also, when you have lipopolysaccharides, dysbiosis, all these things that we always talk about, when you have these problems, they compound non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So we can see this bi-directional and how all these things reach around and affect each other. So the gut's a major player. The cardiovascular system. Now, this does it in a few different ways. You can think about it, obviously, as the buildup of plaque within the arteries will stop perfusion to the brain. So you don't get blood flow, you don't get oxygen, you don't get nutrients, the brain doesn't function properly. Okay, but what it also does is what happens there is it increases blood pressure. That is actually a mechanical, it causes mechanical damage to the brain. So we've got something called the blood-brain barrier, similar to like the barrier in your gut, to in your vascular system. We've all got barriers. And what that's meant to do is keep bad things out and allow what it wants in. But high blood pressure directly affects it and starts to break it down. If you've got people with a dysfunctional blood-brain barrier, you are in a very bad position to look at cognitive decline. So the cardiovascular system's big here. And I did a whole chat on that as well and ways to affect it, right? The mitochondria, these little organelles in every single cell of our body that do loads of things, but probably, I suppose, the most important thing is they produce energy. Ben's mentioned this to me a few times and probably to the group, I'm sure, where he says energy is everything. Our inability to create energy is what creates the environment for disease. So if we've got mitochondrial dysfunction, we will definitely have brain dysfunction because it's what produces energy within our brain. So think about the mitochondria. And I did a whole one on metabolic flexibility and how you can affect the mitochondria to make it as healthy as possible. Blood sugar. I was on a call with one of my clients earlier, Daniel. I don't know if he's on the call. And man, he was like, I heard you're going to do one on the brain tonight. I was like, yeah, it's going to be good. And he goes, oh, how's this research going? I was like, every time I do one of these and I really dig deep into it, the same stuff comes up over and over again for every single condition. It's blood sugar dysregulation. It's inflammation. It's mitochondrial function. It's the gut. It's all the same stuff. But that just emphasizes how important it is. Pick any disease, put it into PubMed and put dysglycemia beside it and you'll find a correlation or causation there. So every time blood sugar goes up and down and up and down, it's giving too much energy to the brain and too little. And every single time that happens, you're affecting the mitochondria. You're causing an increase in reactive oxygen species. And we always don't need to worry about what they are, but you know when everyone says you need to eat antioxidants, they help to quell that. Okay, so controlling your blood sugar is huge for brain function. And I know like there's people on here who have spoken to about this in terms of they're like, well, can I have some spikes? Can I have, yes, like the odd spike in blood sugar is not going to be the problem. It's that massively dysregulated blood sugar that causes issues in the brain. Now, lifestyle factors. Alcohol. I used to work only with Irish and British clients. So when I initially sat down for consultations, my first question, I'd be sat there, I'd be like, all right, just ask them, how many alcoholic beverages do you have a week? And they're like, oh, not that much. I probably have about 4 or 5 beers a night. And you're like, oh, this is going to be so hard. Now, you guys in North America tend not to be as bad. And it was enlightening when I started asking some of my new clients, when I started, I don't drink. I have one beer. I don't drink. It's great. But be honest, think about units. How many units of alcohol do you guys have a week? And be deadly honest, right? So do you think one shot of liquor, small glass of wine, average glass of beer, how many do you have in a week? Let me get the chat up again. 0-0. Well, they're all so boring. Ugh. Does anybody have a beer? No, that's great, man. Like that is obviously ideal, right? But I'm going to give you something interesting. But think about the people in your life as well. So throughout this conversation that we're having, like, you will be affected by cognitive decline at some stage in your life. So having this information can be really beneficial when you speak to people, right? So none of you drink at all. So this is going to mean nothing. But anything above 14 units, I know a lot of you would have seen the Huberman stuff where he talked about having like 2 and 3 drinks a week is bad. But anything over 14 units is really bad. But this was really interesting. So people who abstained from alcohol, who originally drank in their lifetime, but gave it up early, not alcoholics, nothing like that, they had higher incidences of cognitive decline. Can anybody guess why that was? Again, 2 points, right? Or we'll say you get a protein bar. Why would someone who gave up alcohol actually have a risk of it? Anybody going to answer? It's actually not a bad answer, but it's not quite it. Poor liver function. Depression. Yeah, that can happen. Take away something that I'm accustomed to. Good answers, but generally speaking, they think it's loss of community. So like people who drink alcohol regularly, their whole lives are surrounded by that thing. So they go, like, say what you want about the pub or the bars, whatever you want to talk about. People have friends there. They converse there. They talk football there. They do whatever there. They have interaction. They have community. And when they become absent, they tend to lose that. And that's one of the key factors in just overall death, right? Like people who have the perception of loneliness and people who have no purpose, that is a bigger predictor of death than smoking and alcohol. It's massive. It's losing a sense of belonging, right? Like, say what you want. Used to be a very Irish, and I so used to be quite a frequenter of pubs for many years. And for most part, it's a nice environment to be in until you're hungover, right? But alcohol is a major compounding factor. We know this, right? So we know obesity is a major, major issue. But not the time we don't know why. Like, big fat cells, we've all got some fat. A little bit of fat isn't an issue. Big fat cells release pro-inflammatory cytokines anyway. They also release an abundance of leptin. And our brain, so leptin tells the brain when we're full. Now, when we become overweight, we lose that feedback mechanism and we become resistant to leptin. And what happens then is, first of all, we can't regulate appetite. So someone who's got type 2 diabetes and they're told to eat less is actually really bad advice because they cannot regulate their appetite. But away from that, leptin actually causes damage within the brain. It damages the blood-brain barrier when it's in a high abundance. So we probably know this, but dropping body fat, excess body fat, is huge for your brain function. Now, this is obviously, like, people think of this kind of stuff as like, duh, right? Like, obviously, sedentary lifestyle is going to cause issues here. But when I think about us as a community, we work long hours in front of laptops, and we drive to the gym, we spend an hour in the gym, we drive home, we sit on the couch. That is not enough. And you can see it's independently associated with dementia and cognitive decline. We need to move more. And I'll talk about ways that we can do that a little bit later, because it's not about necessarily all the time about like cycling or like on a stationary bike or lifting weight up, down, forward, back, squat, hinge. Like we all move from the same plane of motion. But I'll come back to that. Again, this is going back, man. Like this same mechanisms come up on every single one of my chats. Now, but this one's interesting in the sense that cortisol is a stress hormone. And in small amounts and acutely is really beneficial. But it's neurotoxic to the hippocampus. And I'll explain what that means in a sec, in high amounts or in chronic amounts. The hippocampus is a part of the brain which takes short-term memories, helps to consolidate them into long-term memory, and puts them somewhere else. So like the hippocampus tends to be really active at night. So when you try and study and then you go to sleep and you sleep well, you reinforce that memory so it can be recalled at some stage. What happens though is cortisol directly damages the hippocampus and makes it atrophy, makes it smaller. So like if anyone's dealt with someone who's had cognitive decline, the first thing to go is short-term memory. All the stored memories are still there. They can still remember their wedding. They can still remember their childhood dog. They can remember the day their kids were born, but they don't remember something that happened a few days ago because they can't consolidate those memories anymore. So like for you guys, and that's one of the first signs, is that we start to forget things that have happened recently. So I know like a lot of you guys are high performing men who have to do a lot and have a lot of responsibility, but finding ways to modulate stress is huge. We'll discuss some of it in a minute, but like the standard stuff that we always talk about, getting out in nature, meditation, breath work. There's a reason why your coaches just literally harp on to you about these things. It doesn't just help with fat loss or muscle gain. Helps with your brain. So it's massive. Circadian rhythms. Again, this is your body's internal clock. That's like, it's like a sleep-wake cycle. And it works on a 24-hour clock, as it should, right? But it tells our body when to do certain things. It tells our bodies when to clear out our brain. It tells our bodies when to detoxify. It tells our body when we should sleep, and so on. But one of the major signs of neurodegeneration, cognitive decline, is this gets flipped. So you find people who start to lose it a little bit, for want of a better phrase, are awake at night now. They sleep during the day. They eat at really erratic hours. And it's normally a pre-sign that things are starting to go wrong. So reinforcing circadian rhythms, sleeping at the same time, waking at the same time, eating at the same time, trying to train at the same time, doing all these things consistently can play a big role. So when you look back through those lifestyle factors, these are things that we talk to you about all the time. And there's reasons why, outside of generalized body composition, that they're important. So take note of them, please. And try and emphasize them. So if you're not sleeping regularly, like don't get me wrong, sometimes people don't sleep because of some factor. But if it's just because you don't recognize it as important, or if you think that running on stress hormone keeps you wired, it doesn't. Inevitably, it's breaking your brain down. So we need to take it. We need to take this stuff seriously. But now, so when I talked about what we could do, I didn't want to go into the standard stuff that I speak about every single time, right? Like, you, we know we got to train. We know we got to do aerobic work. We know we have to sleep now. We know we have to modulate stress. But what are some of the other stuff out there in the research that shows that can be really beneficial? Because people always talk about neuroplasticity. So what neuroplasticity is the ability to be able to make connections between neurons. When we look at kids, they've got fuckloads of neurons because neurons don't regenerate. Well, they think they can a little bit, but not much. So once you lose them, that's it. So why don't we get dumber as we get older? Some of us do. Why don't we get dumber as we get older? It's because we create these connections between the neurons that allow us to function. Right. But it's why, like, don't get me wrong, kids have loads of neurons, but they can actually, once they, so that allows them to create more connections. I can use an anecdote. Like, I don't know if people know, in Ireland, we have our own language. It's called Irish or Gaelic. And I went to Irish schools. And so at three, I could already speak English-ish as a three-year-old, right? I got exposed to Irish at a very young age. I was fluent within 18 months. If you ask me to pick up a new language now, I can give you three sentences in 18 months. So that shows how like neuroplasticity with loads of neurons is good. But the ability to be able to do it when we're older is still possible. And some of the ways that we can do that is training in ways that we're not doing now. The reason why I emphasize this, we go to the gym, we work in one plane. We lift up, we pull, we push, we pull down, we squat, we hinge. Some of your coaches might get you to do a little bit of rotational work, but we don't work in different planes of motion. We have to understand the brain has all these different lobes in them. right? And they respond to different stimuli. We talk about the mitochondria earlier. Mitochondrial biogenesis, the growth of new mitochondria, only occurs when you stimulate it. You can't supplement it. You can't. It needs to be stimulated. And moving through different planes, finding things that are harder. And I can use, like, when I was in Toronto last time, me and Gav were lifting, and Ben came over, and he's like, he's ragging on me, right? He's like, you're never going to be able to build your lats or your pec while your spine is that kyphotic, that rounded. So he's like, and I don't know if this is what he meant when he was telling me. He's like, you need to be able to work through these ranges. You need to be able to work in the transverse range. You need to be doing stuff that are technically really demanding and that you don't like. We tend to ease towards comfort. So what he was saying to me was, you need to go and do yoga, right? I'm like, yoga, man. I did one of those classes. I was sweating. And all these little ladies stood there really graceful doing their thing. But doing the thing that we're not doing is really important. So, like, a little bit of homage here to Andrew, a little bit of jujitsu. Like, I mean, I'm sure he could tell you, you get wrapped up in all sorts of different ways. You work plenty of ranges of motion and plenty of different planes, right? And also the cognitive function of having to be in competition with someone else. Hand-foot coordination through kickboxing, tai chi, yoga, picking other things other than weightlifting. Here's a question. Do any of you guys do other activities outside of the gym and possibly cardio that you're told to do from us? Like, I used to box, I don't anymore. So I started doing yoga since I got back. What stuff do you guys do outside? Ice hockey, right? That would probably be pretty good at it as well. That needs a lot of cognition as well. What's the deal with someone hammering you? Construction work. Yeah, brother, that's probably harder than all of them. BJJ is a big one now. So we can see that, like, these other things are really, really important to cognitive health long term, right? So pick an activity that you're not doing. Again, it's the same with learning. So, like, we all stick within what we're good at. Like, I like to read research papers on nutrition. Might sound boring to a lot of you. I like to do that, so I stay within that sphere. And you have to remember, like, different lobes respond to different things. So, like, if you take an engineer, I think engineers tend to be dominated from the right because, like, it's subjective, it's data, it's math. But the left-hand side, if he neurodegenerates, that will go quickest. He'll probably still be able to do the math, but he won't be able to do other things that are important. So stretching out, like, they always think of a bridge is always a big one, especially with old dears in Ireland, right? My mother always plays it. There's a really reason why, like, women who play bridge later into their years keep cognition. Sitting in front of the television is not good enough for you to do this. You need to be constantly training your brain to keep it active, to get mitochondrial biogenesis. So there's loads of different stuff here. Diet-wise, now, I don't expect any of you to follow these diets. I presume none of your coaches have given you any of these specific diets. Maybe some of you are on the ketogenic diet, right? But these are the ones, when you look at the science on this, they don't test macronutrients, right? They test specific diets to try and find out their effects on cognition. The DASH diet is shown to be really effective, but you can pick certain things out of these and add them to yours so that we keep your brain healthy. So the DASH diet was developed in order to lower blood pressure. So it's low sodium, really high fiber, basically. And then there's the Mediterranean diet. Most of us know about this. Loads of healthy fats, olive oil, vegetables, avocado, fish. These kind of things are really beneficial for brain health. And we'll touch on that in supplementation in a sec. And then you got, like, the MIND diet, which is kind of a match of both, right? And that's been that the MIND diet actually been developed to help with brain function in those who are suffering. And it's similar stuff. Like, it's a lot of monounsaturated fats, a lot of vegetables, things like that. And then one, like, I put a question mark beside the ketogenic diet because I'd use that in more extreme cases, especially for people who have what are called, like, primed glial cells, or, like, really bad neuroinflammation from really bad head trauma, people who have been knocked unconscious. The ketogenic diet just bypasses energy production with glucose, and we use ketones, and ketones particular. It's why MCT, people say they get really good energy from taking MCT oil. is because it is neuro anti-inflammatory and it's a really good energy source for the brain. So if people are really struggling with cognition, there's a reason why it's been shown to be really beneficial with epilepsy as well, because it helps dampen brain inflammation. Now, the thing that everyone tends to be waiting for, what supplements can you take to help with brain function? Someone's going to come on immediately after I'm finished talking and go, what about this supplement? What about that supplement? I can't read all the papers. I don't know all of them. So some of them I don't know, right? But these are the ones that pop up over and over and over again that are shown to be beneficial for brain health. And there they are, right? So DHA is a big one, lads. Like, I mean, if most people take a fish oil, that's great. Hey, Harry. Most people take a fish oil, that's great. DHA in particular is one of the components of it. So you have EPA and DHA. DHA actually envelops or like wraps around your neurons. And when our brains get inflamed, that breaks down because it needs to be used elsewhere. It's extremely anti-inflammatory for the brain. It's brilliant in high doses. It's when I think, I'll come back to that point. Resveratrol, curcumin, great anti-inflammatory. It's the same with apigenin. So these ones are anti-inflammatory. DHEA actually helps structurally within the brain as well. Now, like you take these four supplements, even in really high dose, you're not going to go, oof, my brain feels better. Well, if you've got significant neuroinflammation, you might. But I use these preventatively. If you guys want something that can give you that little, like, if you want to feel something immediately, you can use, not NAC, apologies. So NAC is a precursor to glutathione, which is like the master antioxidant in the brain. But like huperzine, alpha-GPC, most of you would have heard of alpha-GPC. It helps increase acetylcholine. And that's the hormone that's responsible for memory and learning. Coordination a little bit as well. So you take alpha-GPC, it'll increase acetylcholine. Pycnogenol will help circulation and get blood flow to the brain. And huperzine A, didn't put the A in, actually helps to not break down acetylcholine. So if you take these three in combination, they will give you excellent brain endurance without being stimulants. So I didn't put any stimulants. Like caffeine's been shown to be really good for the brain, right? If you need a stimulatory way to help brain function. But like I wouldn't, like tyrosine is a precursor to dopamine, but that's quite stimulatory. These help with just generalized focus. Huperzine A has been taken by the Chinese and it's actually used as a medication now for Alzheimer's. It's that beneficial for brain function. It's massive. So, but like I mentioned before, until you've done the above, don't start here. Right? You need to look after the other stuff, the lifestyle factors first, and then you can start looking at supplementation. That's me, brothers. I believe I did that in 30 minutes. It's way too long just to be talking. The floor is open, gents. It doesn't have to necessarily be about what we just spoke about. It can be about anything. Try and keep it within nutrition. If it's training, one of the other lads probably be a little bit better at answering it. But I'm here for any questions you might have. Oh, yes. There's already been loads thrown in for Harry. I will answer those, Harry. Okay, if no one's going to jump in, I'll go through these questions first. If anyone else comes with some... I did remember that question, Harry. I've never seen anything to measure brain neuroplasticity. I hope everyone sees this question. So the second one that Harry asked, how does physical trauma to the head affect our brain over the long term? What is the impact on the rest of our body, dysregulation of the gut caused by the brain? So that's loads of different factors involved in that question. So immediate head trauma or traumatic brain injury will open the blood-brain barrier or will open the gut barrier straight away. Well, straight away, within minutes, right? But what happens if, I know I spoke about it earlier, like glial cells within the brain are like the immune system of the brain. They do lots of other things, but they can become primed, which can be a problem. If they become primed, it's what's called like primed glial cells. They change their shape. and they act differently than they would have before. So they don't act as immune regulators in the same way, and they become really pro-inflammatory and they stay that way. And when that happens, we have to affect it. We have to use anti-inflammatory methods and lifestyle methods to dampen that chronic inflammation. But it definitely affects the gut through what I spoke about earlier, the vagal nerve. If we lose vagal nerve function, what you find with people who get traumatic brain injury is they end up with really bad chronic constipation because they can't contract their guts anymore. So they can't churn and move food down. So there's loads of different factors involved in that. Yes. So that question number three, I touched on that earlier. Yes, they do. And is it an absolute? No, it's not. So if you've had traumatic brain injury, I know you have, and I have as well, at a couple of stages in my life, probably not as bad as yours. But there is ways that you can I wouldn't say necessarily reverse a traumatic brain injury, because that's not true, but there's ways that you can dampen and minimize the effect ongoing for sure. And we can talk about that on the call. Some of the stuff I spoke about in this as well. Exercise protocol supplements, dietary, most dietary for better brain health. Right. So if you think about that one, Harry, let's go to the extreme of it, right? If someone has really bad brain degeneration and they can't regulate mood and they fall apart if they do a little bit of exercise, or they fall apart under any stress, the ketogenic diet's been shown to be the most beneficial because it just bypasses glucose metabolism. It's been shown to be really anti-inflammatory and really beneficial for the brain in those circumstances. It's the same with, I mentioned earlier, epilepsy. It's been shown to be really beneficial. In terms of protocols, like the first ones, I think I sent them to you. The first three I would go to would be curcumin, resveratrol, DHEA to dampen that inflammation for sure. If I was you, I'd use those. I use them preventatively quite regularly. So I would use those preventatively for sure. Dietary musts, you got to avoid saturated fat and sugar in combination, right? Wreaks havoc on the brain. Big spikes of insulin, lots of saturated fat is a big deal. Are things like UV light actually useful for the brain, or is it overhyped? Now, vitamin D deficiency can be an issue with the brain. I don't think people are as deficient in vitamin D as it made out to be. But I'd say vitamin D could be beneficial there for sure. In terms of other mechanisms, unless it helps with blood flow, possibly. But other than that, I wouldn't be 100% sure what else it would do. Number six, massive. Any way to lower cortisol and regulate brain function is going to be really big. So like meditation, when people used to talk to me about that 8 years ago when I first got in the industry, I was like, yeah, whatever. It's just another hippie thing. And now the science is so clear on it about how beneficial it can be for overall health. So like definitely keep that in mind. Does it affect the primal lizard part of the brain? Good question. So the one I'm generally talking about, it can affect all different elements of the brain. So it could affect the limbic system. It could affect the prefrontal cortex. It can affect the cerebellum and all the other lobes within the brain. It just depends what parts of the brain are more resilient. So if you find people that get cerebellum degeneration from like gluten ataxia can do it, and loads of other issues, you'll notice that they start to lose balance, right? Because that regulates balance. If it's frontal lobe issue, then they lose executive function. So they can't think as fast. They can't answer questions. They can't. Then you can think about the hippocampus that I spoke about earlier. They start to lose the ability to recall memories. So like, there's a list of these things and what they're associated with. So it's not, when I say degeneration, I would say overall, but which part of the brain it's affecting, I'm not being specific, because normally you'll find out through symptoms what part of the brain is getting affected. I knew someone was going to ask me a question I didn't know about. Thoughts on mushroom supplementing like lion's mane? The problem is I've seen loads of people get really beneficial symptom relief with them. I don't actually know the mechanism, though. So I'd love to be able to answer that. If anyone knows, it'd be great. I'm just not 100% sure why But I've heard nothing but positive things about Lions Mane. So keep it if it makes you feel good. But I just don't know the mechanism behind it. Anybody else got any questions, lads? You can speak up or you can write them down.
Hey, Greg, I got one. You mentioned earlier, buddy, that there was like this time when you're looking through all these different, you know, symptoms, and you're saying that not a single one of them ever really wasn't fixed by just, you know, general overall good diet and increasing your fitness. That said, is there anything supplementation wise that should be taken that we can't, that we, how do I phrase it? Like that if we don't take it, we're missing on a mass opportunity that we can't fix with regular diet interventions or with fitness and just health.
So I would say probably because we don't get enough of it, I would say DHA would be the, if someone gave, someone said, I don't know what's wrong with me. I have a feeling there's something wrong with my brain. I've only got $50. What will I take? I'd be like DHA. So fish oils for sure. Would be my number one supplement that I would take out of that list. Now, obviously it depends on what the problem is, but that would be my number one.
And when it comes to natural sourcing of DHA, is it just because, like, you know, everything's so farmed these days that we're just missing out on it?
Well, not even actually. Like, it's an interesting one. They did the research on, like, you know, because everyone's afraid of mercury in the fish, right? So that tends to be with farmed fish. It can be with wild fish as well. Depends how big the fish is. But the actual DHEA in farmed fish is lower anyway. But even if you're getting mercury with DHEA, it seems to, the DHEA seems to outweigh the negative effects of mercury. So, but like supplements, especially high quality ones, tend to be tested for mercury anyway. So like you can still get it from farms, but most of us just don't eat enough of it.
Okay, and then I had kind of like a fitness part two of that question. At the beginning of the call, you're talking about mitochondrial dysfunction. Is there ever a time when somebody can be like very fit doing all the things and they can still have mitochondrial dysfunction that, again, wouldn't be fixable in your experience, fixable through regular like fitness interventions, and they'd have to do something specific?
Yeah, like... So if people have immune problems, for sure, because immune system activation, without getting too deep into it, makes us just metabolize carbohydrates. And that becomes a real problem for people. So they can't use fats for fuel. So most of the time when people have immune issues, they're mostly based around gut dysfunction. So some people who are super duper healthy, or like for the most part, they train, they eat right, but they've got really bad gut dysfunction, will be metabolically compromised, I would say is the best way to put it. And you see that they can't, like, they've got all these blood sugar problems from it. Like they can't make it from one meal to the next, even though they eat perfectly. And so the gut's definitely a big component in that. And then the immune system can be from something else, right? So it could be from a liver, it could be from liver dysfunction, kidney dysfunction, could be from a load of different things. But that tends to be the thing that you'll see for people who have not directly related to just diet and exercise and sleep and all the standard stuff we talk about. Salmon roe. I don't know what that is, Chad. Chad?
Seriously? No caviar for you?
Oh, man. I grew up on a council estate, brother. We did not have caviar.
I'm just saying to the question of DHA.
I have no idea, brother.
Anyone? Salmon eggs.
Salmon eggs. I don't know. I'll find out for you, right?
We'll have some caviar sometime.
We will. We
went on one of the trips. Caviar and a Guinness. Don't tell anybody that.
You know? That's a good combo. I'll give you that. Anybody else, fellas, before we wrap up?
Greg, you kind of mentioned people having, you know, kind of first signs, specifically having just short-term memory loss, not remembering things. And then I guess kind of past that, through your research, did you find any relative age brackets where as far as onset for people, like when things progress past that, right, as it goes through the timeline? Is there a relative age bracket?
It seemed, well, it's yeah, actually, it's funny you asked that. So males, it tends to be 50-ish. Now, obviously, like when they look at these studies, they only take the mean. So like there's people either side of that, right? And then for females, it tends to be postmenopausal. So like when they lose estrogen, it becomes a real problem. And actually cognitive function, when you look at it, like men who lose testosterone has big association with cognitive decline as well. I just didn't put it in here because it's a whole different conversation.
Thanks, brother.
Yes, all right, my friend. Not a problem. Anybody else got anything? Otherwise, we're going to wrap it up here, fellas. Just remember, if you're still interested in coming to
that's Chad again. And I know you and I, we've talked on a number of these things, but with this talk, you know, a number of things popping in my head about potential causes on things, right? Like, obviously, the gut stuff we've talked about, but even the brain stuff that I just forget about, concussions. But I guess where I'm going is, any thoughts on tests that you can do to verify some of these things? That you talked about. Like the glial cells stuff, for example, right? Like, how do you?
You can't. It doesn't come up under brain scan. Unfortunately, like you can obviously check for white matter on the brain, which can be an issue, right? But for glial cell activation, you can't see it on a scan. You normally have to work off symptoms. Now, if you had glial priming, which it's called, brother, like, I mean, you would know. You have no cognitive function. Most people have really chronic depression with it. So most people know if they have that particular issue.
The thing that triggers for me is you're talking about the blood sugar regulation type stuff. And I'm definitely, as you know, I've been messing around and obsessed with the levels data and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I see the things around the dysregulation you talk about with blood sugar that sometimes is not even related to meals, right? And that's where I start to think of that. You talked about the cortisol management. I don't know where I was going with that, other than that's where my brain goes to trying to think through, you know, causes of that, managing that cortisol or those stress responses. Because I'll just see it, something completely unrelated to food, and all of a sudden a spike happens, and it was just a phone call or something, right? And it goes 30, 40 points.
Well, Ben would be way better at talking about this than I would. But breathing mechanics play a big role in your stress response, like a big role. And it's not something I'm particularly clued up on. But like your ability to be able to regulate your breath will determine how much cortisol you release. Because cortisol, what it does is it liberates stored energy. So it'll release glucose into the bloodstream in preparation for fight or flight. It's the goal of it.
Right.
But like being able to regulate breath, I think, is a really big factor in that.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I obviously work on that all the time under control. It's a whole nother thing to make it automatic, right? And at the right time, right?
You have to be obsessive about it. You have to be obsessive. Exactly.
Because you're exactly right. I know that's probably what's happening. I'm just holding my breath. Like, it's someone said something really stupid. And anyway.
I'll throw one other real quick tidbit to the group. I can't remember where I read it, but as far as cognition and memory, I remember reading something related to dancing. So Greg alluded to it a little bit with doing things like sports and other things, but specific to memory, they found that by dancing and moving your body through space and remembering the sequence of the footwork and things like that supported memory.
Sure. Dance, fellas. All right, fellas. Been an absolute pleasure. Don't forget, if you're still interested in Costa Rica, make sure you reach out to your coach. It's midnight my time. I got to go to bed. Need my beauty sleep. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, brother.
Oh, let me recording.